What's happening, guys? Welcome to the Lake Erie Currents podcast. I forget what episode that we're on. I think 222. We're sorry we missed you last week. We unfortunately, two of our crew members here were very ill, but we're back. And we'd like to thank, of course, our premier sponsor for this year is Fairly Decent Golf, our friend Bobby. Doing some real good work out there. Check him out on TikTok. I don't know if his account is still up on Instagram or not. Bobby, we love you, buddy. Hang in there. Good man, good dad, and a fairly decent golfer. The official premier sponsor of our podcast. Love you, buddy. So, a couple of interesting things happened while we were away. Most recently, two things that we're going to discuss before we get into the nitty-gritty. First, OJ finally made his way to wherever the fuck he's going. Maybe a little bit warm where he's headed. Who knows? I'm sure
He
that
might get a very large pineapple shoved up his ass.
Yeah, chances are it's a shame that he didn't live long enough to find the killer of his wife and her
Yeah.
boyfriend.
What
It's
a
a real
shame.
shame.
What a shame.
Yeah, my God. So he's
You know,
dead.
some things are just forever a mystery, I
You
guess.
truly will never know, and that's what
Never.
bothers me. He's dead. The other thing that I want to address too, real quick, yesterday. I don't hop on Twitter for much anymore. I get on there for maybe 5 minutes a day. Usually when you're doing a poop or something, you're like, oh, let's see what's going on. These people are still saying the same shit they were saying 5 years ago. Only yesterday, the biggest trend was World War III. And that's because initially people thought Iran was going to destroy Israel. You're having a laugh if that's what you think, okay? But they sent a huge drone and missile swarm over to Israel. The Jews knocked out 99% of their projectiles, and then the Iranians said, okay, the mission is over. For all of you that get all worked up, get your panties in a bunch, there's a good example that we should follow right here. Do you know why nobody really goes hard in the paint with them anymore? It's because they have nuclear weapons. That's why. We gave them nuclear, and by we, I mean they, and by they, I mean the US government gave Israel nuclear weapons. Okay? They don't need our fucking help. I don't even know why we're bothering. Okay? They don't need us for anything. They don't. They have the latest and greatest, whatever. They come up with their own shit. Do you guys remember, it was right before COVID, Trump ordered the assassination of this IRGC guy that's the Iranian Republican Guard Corps. His name was Soleimani. He was like one of the highest ranking IRGC guys. He was assassinated, and then the Iranians said, there's a response coming. We're gonna fuck you up. And they did like this token missile launch at an American base, a forward operating base in Iraq, and then that was the end of it. They were like, yeah, that was our response.
Okay.
They know better. Like, I don't know how to put it, because I think Iran would end up a parking lot if the fucking Jews went crazy. That's what I'm thinking. I'm not saying that that's right, and I feel bad for the Iranian people because they, many other countries in the world, are run by fanatical lunatics. Regular Iranian people, I don't hold them responsible for the bullshit their government does, just like I hope people don't hold us responsible for the stupid shit our government does. God willing, they don't. But yeah, that was a token response. They enjoy this proxy war that they do. Like, for example, funding Hamas and Hezbollah, they fund them both. Do you think they give a shit about all of the Lebanese and Palestinians that are murdered by the Israelis as a response? They don't care. They're pawns on a chessboard. That's what they don't give a shit. They love doing this stuff because it riles up Israel, and then they can retreat. It's a Mott and Bailey, right? They go out of the Bailey, they do a quick attack, and they retreat to the Mott, and then they let their little fucking foot soldiers get massacred by the IDF. They do it all the time. That's what they do. So I would relax with the World War III. If that's going to happen anywhere, it's probably Eastern Europe, if you know what I'm saying. That's more likely. Because they're also run by two crazy fucking crazy people, one of them who has the largest nuclear arsenal on the planet. So whatever. Buckle up, buckaroo. It's going to be fun. So we talked about OJ. We talked about Iran. We're lamenting the fact that OJ never got to find his wife and her boyfriend's killer. God rest his soul. I hope whatever works out, works out. Next, what I want to talk about here, I know this is an older article, and we were talking about it in a group chat with myself and Lexi and Dustin. Okay, we're talking about this. Okay, and this is the eat the lentils and let your pets die of cancer. Now, this is great. This is from Bloomberg a while ago, not that long ago. They got slammed for an out of touch op-ed lecturing Americans earning less than $300,000 on how to beat inflation. That's all of you, because no rich people listen to this fucking show, I could tell you right now, okay? A March 13th op-ed by Teresa, I'm going to call her Ghirardelli, or it's Ghiralducci, I don't know, the chocolate lady, was criticized online for suggestions on how to deal with inflation, suggesting switching to vegetables and avoid inflated meat prices. Also took posed taking public transportation because prices are only up 8% compared to 38% for gasoline. This piece also declares that the cost of living crisis most affects those who earn less than $300,000 a year. No shit. I mean, that's brilliant cutting edge journalism. Politicians and other public figures took to Twitter to criticize the piece. The U.S. Consumer Price Index rose 7.9% in February of 2022 from the previous year, the most since June of 1982, affecting food, clothing, shelter, and other basic necessities for regular Americans. Gasoline continued to skyrocket. This is what she said here. Though your palate may not be used to it, tasty meat substitutes include vegetables, where prices are up a little over 4%, or lentils and beans, which are up about 9%, she writes. Plan to cut out the middle creature and consume plants directly. It's a more efficient, healthier, cheaper way to get calories. And for new pet owners, she advises to rethink those costly pet medical needs by cutting back on cancer treatment for much loved furry friends. It may sound harsh, she lectured, but researchers actually don't recommend pet chemotherapy, which could cost up to $10,000 for ethical reasons. She also tells readers to reconsider public transportation to avoid gas prices, pointing out that public transportation prices are only up 8%. The op-ed post on Twitter received a slew of scathing quote retweets.
It's cheaper. I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Bus passes. Okay, so like you can, I don't know, it's been a long time, but from what I understand, like bus passes, are. You can get a 30-day one or whatever, but they're kind of expensive. I don't know how much they are now, but like I remember back in the day, I thought that, well, I guess it's cheaper in the long run, but if you don't use your car that much, like me, for an example, I don't use my car that much. So like it would be more expensive for me to buy a bus pass than it would be to just drive my car to and from work. Like, I don't know. Gas wise, money wise, I don't know.
The thing is when I had lived in the Pittsburgh area for about a month, and I did take the bus to work. It's not expensive, but what you get in return is a complete lack of control of your own mobility. So for those of you that know, I
And
have
it's more expensive on the time part of the
correct.
equation.
Yeah, which is the most precious of all your resources is time. For those of you that know that I have elderly parents, so the idea of not having my car readily accessible, God forbid there's an emergency, it's a 45-minute drive back to the depot where I did the park and ride before I can even get into my car to return home to see what's going on. That was a, that's a and not and I'm not trying to be funny. But like if I'm at the office regularly and I have a case of explosive diarrhea, the last thing I want to do is take the bus home because you're shitting yourself on the bus. If I shit myself, it's the privacy of my own car. Okay? I have a little dignity. Nobody wants that. Like the bus is a problem. And everybody knows in the Akron area that bus after dark is a different story, is a very different story. I'm not going to say it's New York subway in the evening, scary. But it can be interesting what happens. Sometimes the later the bus runs, the crazier the people get. So here we go. Complaining about the price of gas, the elite say, quote, let them eat lentils. Republican congressional candidate for Rhode Island, Jessica de la Cruz, tweeted, comparing her own solutions with each of the points in the Bloomberg tweet. Matt Rinaldi, chairman of the Republican Party of Texas tweeted that he doesn't think get rid of your car and eat lentils instead of meat is a winning message for Democrats. Former Democratic presidential candidate Marianne Williamson was one of the many people on Twitter who responded, eat cake. This is what this Jessica De La Cruz, her response is to temporarily suspend the state gas tax. Okay. Open up domestic energy. Okay. Send me to Congress to fight for energy independence. It's never going to happen, Jessica. They don't want your solutions at all. The elite solution for inflation is sell your car, let your pet die, eat lentils. Nobody said this would be fun. That's very clever. That's very clever.
I mean, yeah, okay. So, like, this person obviously is like, okay, well, I'm trying to give you suggestions of what you can do if you want to save money, right? But that person probably doesn't have a pet. And it that this person, and if they do, they're probably an asshole. Because if anybody has had a pet and has bonded with that pet, knows that when a pet is sick, or potentially sick, the thoughts that go through your head are like, oh my God, you know, what am I like? You love the pet very, very much. Like it's, you know, a family member. It's a part of your crew, you know? Like my dog, when he coughs and he coughs too many times in a row, I jump up. I'm like, are you fucking choking, dude? Like, I'm ready to perform the dog Heimlich. You know, I've looked online how to do that. Like, it terrifies me because I'm like, if he's fucking choking, you can't, it's not like a human. You have to do different shit. Like, you have to, like, you know, push up on their, like, stomach and chest area as they're, like, laying down or on their side. And you gotta, like, you have to stick your hand in their mouth into the back of their throat and pull whatever is in there out. Like, you have to, like, manually dislodge it. And it's not, you know, it's not something that's easy to do because their body is different. And I don't even know if I'd be able to do it, but I would fucking try my best, you know? And, like, it just scares me. So this person obviously does not have an attachment to animals if they do have animals. Furthermore, they probably have a lot of money. And so they're like, well, you know, when I didn't have a lot of money, you know what was really eating me up? My fucking car payment or my gas payment or whatever. Why don't you just take the bus if you don't have money? Save money by taking the bus. It's like, well, you know what? Why don't you just go fuck yourself? How about that's the answer?
I like the one dude's tweets further down. His suggestions are win the lottery, skip meals by sleeping in an extra 24 to 48 hours, and to hitchhike, check with your folks to see if your old room is still available. Yeah. And my favorite, coincidentally, drop in on friends around mealtime.
That's a great strategy. Try insect protein instead of lentils. Whew. Yeah, boy, did they take an L on that one. What a stupid. who is the editor that's like, go ahead and run that.
They'll
love to read this.
Yeah. That's completely in tune with the American zeitgeist. Publish it.
Let your pets die. Ride the bus. Fuck
Eat
you.
Eat lentils.
Have some beans, you fuckers.
Yeah. Oh, like, oh, come on, some tough times. Eat some beans, asshole.
Oh, man. I wonder what she's doing now for a living. I mean, that was a massive L. You even got Democrats to come after you. That's how you know how bad it is. Because, you know, they don't have babies. So, like, they have pets. And that's the thing that kind of unites people, right? Like, they may not agree on a lot of things, but people fucking love their dogs and cats, man. They love their pets. It's their companion. People don't like that shit. When you start fucking with, like, hey, let your dog or your cat die, they're like, hey, buddy, fuck you. How about that? Like, I don't have much going for me, but this is my family, so fuck you. I mean, a wild time. It was like
let me get you a 4-inch chunk of garden hose, and you can suck shit straight from my ass. How's that sound?
Yes.
How's that sound?
I love that. Yeah. I love that. That's perfect. Remember Obama took a lot of heat when you know, he was pushing the Affordable Care Act through with his supermajority, And he's like, well, sometimes, you know, these medical boards have to make decisions if it's okay for grandma to get this operation or she should just have drugs. And it's like, I don't think the government should be in a position to make any decisions about what happens to grandma,
Yeah.
asshole. Like,
Yeah.
what is this shit? Again, it's about money. It's like, oh,
Well,
well.
and that's when you wind up with things like Canada's MAID program.
Go on with that.
The assisted suicide
Thank
shit.
you. Yeah.
Like, oh, tired of waiting to get the medical care you need? Kill yourself.
Just we'll help. We'll help. God, what a oh,
don't know.
Hey, you know what? All yous that voted for all this shit are get, you know, the you get you're getting what you fucking deserve, but then again, we also have to get, we endure the fallout from your stupid choices. And by the way, I can't wait to remind people that choosing the lesser of two evils that's coming up in, oh, I don't know, 8 months or seven
In the
months,
most important election of your lifetime.
times a million. These are Christian people who will fucking justify voting for the lesser of two evils. I haven't read that anywhere. I don't remember Jesus saying one fucking word of that shit. So go ahead and keep telling yourself that you're doing the right thing. Go ahead. Go ahead and keep telling yourself you're doing the right thing. You know what I'm voting for? Mickey fucking Mouse. That's who I'm voting for. Because that mouse is a racist. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh
Let your pet die.
what's your pet die?
You're a fat diabetic
Yeah.
Oh, that was good.
It's really great. National socialism.
Yes. Hey, we got some good stories here, though. This is a good one, though. Folks, don't ever give up your guns. Don't ever give them up. Don't ever give them up. And don't, you know, old folks, they have a right to defend themselves too. It's a great story. This is a feel-good story. This is good for your soul, okay? Because I know we bring you more of the same, but this is actually a heartwarming story. An 85-year-old Idaho woman is being deemed a hero after she shot and killed an intruder inside her home. Bless her soul. According to a press release from the Bingham County, Idaho Sheriff's Office, the home invasion happened around 2 a.m. on the 13th of March when Derek Condon broke into the home of 85-year-old Christine Jenahane, who was asleep in her bed. According to the release, she reported being woken up by an unknown man later identified as Condon, who was dressed in a military jacket and black ski mask, pointing a gun and flashlight at her. This is when Condon put her in handcuffs and took her to the living room of her house where she was handcuffed to a wooden chair. According to the release, investigation found that Condon most likely hit her in the head with his gun while she was in bed. Blood was found on her pillow and the floor of her bedroom. She also reported to the sheriff's office that she believed she hit her head at some point during the home invasion. Wasn't exactly sure what happened. According to the release, she reported that Condon asked where her valuables were and placed his pistol against her head after she said she didn't have much. She then told him there were two safes downstairs. Condon went downstairs multiple times and rummaged through several rooms. At some point, Condon learned that her disabled son was also inside the home, became angry at her for not telling him. At one point, when Condon was downstairs, she dragged the chair she was handcuffed to, this is an 85-year-old woman, to her bedroom to get her 357 Magnum revolver from under her pillow.
Yeah.
Yes, sir. Went back to the living room and hid it in the couch. Christine's memory of exactly what occurred seems unclear, the release said. She told authorities she made the decision that it was now or never, drew her concealed 357 Magnum, and hit Condon with both of her shots. Condon returned fire and emptied his 9mm pistol, hitting her multiple times in the abdomen, leg, arm, and chest, according to the release. He then went to the kitchen where he died from his gunshot wounds. Bravo! Bravo! One less motherfucker on planet Earth. She fell to the floor, still handcuffed, where she remained for about 10 hours. She was able to call 911 after her son came upstairs later in the morning and gave her the phone, according to the release. That's agony for 10 hours. According to the Facebook post, Condon's death has been ruled a justifiable
God
homicide.
damn fucking right it is.
Beautiful. Quote, "We appreciate the patience and understanding that has been displayed by the public in regards to this incident. Despite what some might think, details were not released to protect the integrity of the case and for proper procedure to be followed in the event of loss of life. We take the same approach, whether it's justifiable homicide by law enforcement or," I hate the word civilian, "it's a citizen. They're not civilians. You're not at war, cops. There's always a lengthy, thorough, and detailed investigation warranted." Bullshit. The sheriff's office department said on the Facebook page along with the release, "Now that we're able to release the details, we wish to make it clear that our intention is not to defame the name of the suspect involved or make a tragedy
fuck
worse
him.
For his family." We don't care.
Fuck him and fuck his family too, because they probably didn't fucking raise him right.
I agree
so fuck,
completely.
Fuck your family.
Yeah. You're going to break into an old lady's house and hit her and rob her?
Yeah.
This is the result I want.
Shame. Yeah. Shame to you and your family, you dead son of a bitch.
It's beautiful. Bye. Beautiful. God bless
you. Au revoir. Tell OJ hello in hell.
That's right. Yes, sir. She fucking dropped that motherfucker. Two shots. An 85-year-old woman with a 357.
Yeah.
Beautiful
drop
work.
That motherfucker. I love it. That's a beautiful story.
She should be given a medal for her. I mean, she and she got hit and she was fucking injured for 10 hours. 10 hours. That's a tough bird, dude. That is a tough fucking old lady. God bless her.
Yeah, don't fuck with granny.
No. And especially with her disabled son in the house.
Yeah.
You know what? If that criminal had a modicum of decency, first of all, he would have never hit her. Never. If you're a thief, you're a thief. You steal people's shit and get the fuck out of Dodge. That's what thieves do. They don't even want you home, neighbor. They're going to watch. A good thief is never going to run into you. They're going to fucking watch your habits and be like, hey, the pasty Irish guy, he's not home. Nobody's home. Let's go steal his stuff before he comes home and tries to shoot us. They steal your stuff and they leave. This motherfucker should have, I mean, sorry, I'm glad you're dead. I'm going to say it. Goodbye.
Yep.
Goodbye. We are happy to see you go. Happy trails to the hot place.
Au revoir, asshole.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Yeah, Auf Wiedersehen.
So that was, I told you.
I'd offer you some Aldi's chocolate and a cigarette from my Aldi's fanny pack, but you're dead, asshole.
Shy's caught.
No, I will not take him to the hospital. I don't want to get blood in my Volkswagen.
You also know that the fanny pack is white, so the blood on it doesn't come out.
Yeah, it doesn't come out very well.
Oh, man, this is great shit. This is great shit. So, this is the pissing about age in history, where fuckery and absurdity are at all-time highs. I know you might think, well, 100 years ago, they probably thought the same thing when women were flappers. However, I don't think that's the same case. This is a good one. Biohacker who used son's blood to reverse aging says he's transitioning now. Great. Wonderful. More of the same. Biohacker Brian Johnson, it's Brian with a Y, no relation, said his body is transitioning as he continues his mission to try and reverse his age. You know, defying science and evolution, whatever. While the rest of us deal with various aches, pains, and extended hangovers that come with getting older, Johnson has spent the last few years paying millions of dollars to fend off the effects of aging. With the help of a team of doctors and health experts, Johnson, who is biologically 46, listen to that statement, but I'm biologically 46, has taken up treatments to achieve the body of an 18-year-old. Dubbed Project Blueprint, Johnson's experiments to reverse aging include a strict diet, exercise, and meticulous sleep routine, as well as medical procedures ranging from regular blood tests to infusing himself with a liter of his son's plasma. What he described as the world's first multi-generational plasma exchange took place in 2023 and saw Johnson exchange the fluid with both his 17-year-old son and 70-year-old father. Nothing weird about this at all.
Yeah.
The procedure came in an effort to reduce age-related brain decline. But just take a Centrum, dude. What's wrong with you? But in July, Johnson admitted there were no, or the Aldi brand. The Aldi brand.
The Aldi brand.
Yeah. Our vitamins, they work really well on the Eastern Front. God almighty. I love that store. But in July, Johnson admitted there were no benefits detected. And he was choosing to discontinue the therapy. Interesting. Young plasma exchange may be beneficial for biologically older populations or certain conditions, he tweeted at the time. Does not, in my case, stack benefit on top of my existing interventions. But while the particular experiment proved futile, Johnson has seen results in his efforts to reverse his age. He took to Twitter, also known as X, this week to share a series of images showing how his appearance changed throughout his journey, comparing his face to how he looked in 2018. What we can tell you is he looks even more gaunt and even more sick than he did in 2018. That's all I'm going to say. That's all I'm going to say. He looks fucking terrible.
Yeah.
The images show a noticeable change. I agree. Fast forward 6 years and a whole range of procedures later, the biohacker's cheekbones are more pronounced. It's also known as being gaunt. His hair is darker and longer. He went from being a ginger to having dark hair and no weight on him whatsoever. Congratulations. Even my face ID is confused, Johnson wrote alongside the photos, adding, I'm transitioning. In a follow-up post, Johnson asked ex-users to vote when he peaked during his journey. And everybody said 51% said 2018 when he started. That's the best you looked, asshole, before all of this shit. Oh my God.
Now you look like a pictures. Now you look like a fucking chemotherapy patient.
He does, man. Like, he really looks awful. Like,
do you think, he looks fucking sick.
Do you think he dyed his hair? Like, that can't be a cause of plasma transfusions. I mean, I'm not a phlebotomist, but I mean, for fuck's sake, really? Your hair went from ginger to like, I mean, seriously. It's not like, now it would have been interesting if he also grew a beard, if it was ginger, and then you could say, okay, well, now we know you're dyeing your hair. But no, it's strange looking. Did you see it, Angel? You got it? Yeah, that's 2018 on the left-hand side, and then 2024 on the right-hand side. This is not a man who looks well.
He
just
looks like he lost weight.
And his hair is
different. I don't know, man. Even as his eyes look lifeless.
I agree with that.
Like, look at his eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm sorry. I don't think he looks good. Like,
no.
He looked way better when he had a pudgy face.
Yeah, and he looked, like, that's all, honestly, like, if I had to guess the difference between these two pictures, I would say that he went on a diet and he dyed his hair brown or black or whatever that color is.
Yeah. Yeah. You
know? Other than that, I wouldn't say that she looks like a woman. I would say he looks like a skinny man, like a guy that went on a diet. I don't really know, you know,
yeah.
I mean, I don't see woman in that face. I still see a man.
Well, I don't think that's the point. I think the point is that, like, he transitioned from a middle-aged man like myself to the body of an 18-year-old. I don't think he's transitioning to become a woman. I don't think so. Or her penis or whatever it is that he's doing.
Yeah.
Johnson first noticed the dreaded gray hairs in his 20s. Oh, fucking neighbor, you have no idea.
Oh, okay. So I misunderstood
no,
what
you're
this
fine.
Was about.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
He's now he went from being 40, a body of a 46-year-old man to an 18-year-old kid. But the question is, but blood aside, how does that have an effect on your bone structure? Because your bones are still 46 fucking years old.
God, this picture, he looks fucking.
That's
terrible.
What we're saying here, man. He did not. This is not an improvement. This is not an improvement.
This is an improvement to this.
Okay, I'll give you that. I'll give you that for sure.
He looks terrible in that last picture.
Yeah, you don't look good at all. And everybody voted, and he looked better before he started this whole
shit. I mean, he looks better in this picture, I would say. I don't know how old he is, but, like, his haircut looks nicer. This is the same person, I would think.
It
right?
is the same person. It's just on the right-hand side, he looks sick. Like Christopher says, it looks like...
No, yeah,
he's got a disease.
He looks like a 42-year-old man who could probably stand to gain maybe 5-10 pounds.
Fair enough.
I don't know. I don't know how he's supposed to look like an 18-year-old.
Johnson first noted those dreaded gray hairs in his 20s, something he contributed to his lifestyle. I don't think so, neighbor. I think it's just We're not designed to live past 30, but we keep pushing it. It was kind of crazy time in my life. I was building Braintree, Venmo. I had three little babies. I was in a challenging relationship. That means that you and your old lady were not getting along. Trying to leave my born into religion, a lot going on. I was really depressed. Now Johnson uses GR7, an anti-hair loss and anti-gray treatment. There we go. And Meraki, an herbal extract that he applies once a week. And nowadays, Johnson is looking as fresh as ever, says fucking who. He's spending $2 million a year to reverse his biological age. So if you have that cool $2 million a year, you too can look like you have cancer. Or you could just smoke with cigarettes and get sick and get cancer on your own, or you could just fucking age gracefully.
Yeah, and just be normal. Be normal.
The gray hair comes, man. Here's the thing I don't understand as far as men are concerned. Like, I'm 44 and I still have a full head of hair, right? I don't care if it's fucking gray. I really don't. That doesn't bother me. At least you still have it. There were kids I went to high school that were losing their hair at 18. Like, I mean, I was like, whew, this is early in the game, neighbor. You know what I mean? Then a lot of folks started losing it in their 20s, and then a lot of them were bald into their 30s. If you still got your hair and you're approaching 40, you're doing well. You're doing very well. Who cares if it's gray? Like, I love those commercials where they're like, oh, take this comb and, you know, if you have gray in your beard, you know, use this comb to color in your hair until it fucking rains, and then you look like Rudy Giuliani on stage where the shit's just running down your face. You know what I mean? Or if you pop a hot sweat, you know, the weather gets warm, it's humid, and then you have the fucking color running out of your beard onto your white shirt because, you know, it's, you know, a holiday weekend. You're wearing white. I don't know. I don't understand it, man. I get the dyeing of the hair. I get that. But what I don't get is just not fucking accepting, hey, man, like, you're still alive. You're going to get gray. You're going to get wrinkles. You're still alive. It gets worse the older you get. The ailments will pile up. But whatever, man. You still got your hair. You know, be happy with what you got. I mean, that's the way I see it. That's the way I see it. So, yeah, $2 million a year, you can look like a gaunt cancer patient if you or you could go to Flint, Michigan, drink all of the water you want, and get Legionnaire's disease and die.
Yeah, you know, yeah.
Whatever. One of those is free, and that's Flint's water. So that's what we have with that. Now, here's an interesting article. For some of you, I figured that you would find this somewhat interesting. And this is about how the ballpoint pen killed cursive. I don't agree with that because I write in cursive and I use a ballpoint pen or a pencil. But here we go. Check this out. In 2015, Bic launched a campaign to save handwriting. Named Fight for Your Right, WRITE, includes a pledge to encourage the act of handwriting in the pledge taker's home and community and emphasize putting more of the company's ballpoints into classrooms. As a teacher, I couldn't help but wonder how anyone could think there is a shortage. I find ballpoint pens all over the place, on classroom floors, behind desks, dozens of castaway collect and cups on each and every teacher's desk. They're so ubiquitous that the word ballpoint is rarely used. They're just pens. But despite its popularity, the ballpoint pen is relatively new in history of handwriting. Its influence on popular handwriting is more complicated than the Bic campaign would imply. The creation story of the ballpoint pen tends to highlight a few key individuals, most notably the Hungarian journalist Laszlo Biru, who is credited with inventing it. But as most stories of individual genius, this take obscures a much longer history of iterative engineering and marketing success. In fact, Biru wasn't the first to develop the idea. The ballpoint pen was originally patented in 1888 by an American leather tanner named John Loud, but his idea never went further. Over the next few decades, dozens of other patents were issued for pens that used a ballpoint tip some kind, but none of them made it to market. These early pens failed not in their mechanical design, but in their choice of ink. The ink used in fountain pens, the ballpoint's predecessor, is thinner to facilitate a better flow through the nib. But put that in thicker ink inside a ballpoint pen and you'll end up with a leaky mess. Ink is where Laszlo Biru, working with his chemist brother, Gyorgy, made crucial changes. They experiment with thicker, quick-drying inks, starting with the ink used in newsprint presses. Eventually, they refined both the ink and the ball tip, designed to create a pen that didn't leak as badly. This was an era in which a pen could be a huge hit because it only leaked sometimes. The Biros lived in troubled time, however. The Hungarian author Gyorgy Moldova writes in his book Ballpoint about Laszlo's flight from Europe to Argentina to avoid Nazi persecution. Isn't it the other way around? Don't you flee to, from Europe to Argentina to avoid Nuremberg? But whatever. I mean, they still ran into Nazis down there, which is interesting, right? Okay, so his big break came later that year when the British Air Force, in search of a pen that would work at high altitudes, purchased 30,000 of the pens. All right. Guys, do you remember the story? I know that I'm probably talking about this way too much, but you remember NASA spent a bunch of money on pens that worked in space?
Yeah.
And then the communists, who even a broken clock is right twice a day, they're like, you take pencil. It's right any condition. You'll use pencil. That was the right move. I hate to admit it, but they were right on that one. It's cool to have a pen that writes in space, but in the end, pencil and pencil sharpener will work just fine in zero gravity. Soon, patents were filed and sold to various companies in Europe and North America, and the ballpoint pen began to spread across the world. Businessmen made significant fortunes by purchasing the rights to manufacture the ballpoint pen in their country, but one is especially noteworthy. Marcel, it looks like Bich, but it's Bic, B-I-C-H without the T. The man who bought the patent rights in France. Bic didn't just profit from the ballpoint, he won the race to make it cheap. When it first hit the market in 1946, a ballpoint pen sold for around $10, roughly the equivalent to $100 today. Competition brought the price steadily down, but Bic's design drove it into the ground. When the Bic Crystal hit the American market in 1959, price was down to 19 cents a pen. It sells for about the same amount despite inflation. The ballpoint's universal success has changed how most people experience ink. Its thicker ink was less likely to leak than of its predecessors for most purposes, this was a win. No more ink-stained shirts, no need for those stereotypical geeky pocket protectors. However, thicker ink also changes the physical experience of writing, not necessarily all for the better. I wouldn't have noticed the differences if it weren't for my affection for unusual pens, which brought me to my first good fountain pen. I also have a fountain pen. And they do write differently. A lifetime writing with ballpoint and minor variations on the concept, gel pens, roller balls, left me unprepared for how completely different a fountain pen would feel. Its thin ink immediately leaves a mark on paper without even the slightest pressure-free touch to the surface. My writing suddenly grew extra lines appearing between what used to be separate pen strokes. My hand, trained by the ballpoint, expected that lessening the pressure from the pen was enough to stop writing, but I found I had to lift it clear off the paper entirely. Once I started to adjust to this change, however, it felt like a godsend. A less firm press on the page also meant less strain on the hand. My fountain pen is a modern one and probably not a great representation of typical pens in the 1940s, but still had some of the old troubles that plagued the fountain pens and quills of old. I have to be careful where I rest my hand on paper, wrist smudging my last still wet line into an ineligible blur. I understand that. As a teacher whose kids are usually working with numbers and computers, handwriting isn't an immediate concern to me as to many of my colleagues. But every so often I come across another story about the decline of handwriting. By the way, I can attest to this because there's kids my son's age who don't know how to sign their name on a document. Like they don't know they don't have a signature. They print their name. They don't sign anything. It's very weird. Story
that is kind of odd.
It is. Inevitably, these articles focus on how writing has been supplanted by newer digital platforms of communication, typing, texting, Facebook, Snapchat. They discuss the loss of class time for handwritten practice that is instead devoted to typing lessons. Last year, a New York Times article, one that's since been highlighted by the Bix Fight for Your Right, WRITE campaign, brought up by the FMRI study, suggesting that writing by hand may be better for kids learning than using a computer. I think there's some truth to that. I will say that. Like, when I take notes by hand, I have a tendency to remember them a little bit easier than when I'm typing notes. And I'm talking about in an academic setting. That's just, I don't know what it is. there has to be a connection. If somebody knows what that connection is, I'd love to hear it. I don't know about the rest of you, but when I take physical notes, writing them down, I, for whatever reason, I retain that information far better. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's because we grew up in the 80s and that's just kind of what we did in the 80s and 90s. So it's, and that's the end of the 20th century for the rest of you. Yes, we know. I know that people love to do, oh yeah, the late 20th century.
Fuck you.
Yes, sir. Yes,
fuck
sir.
Fuck you.
Call that 85-year-old granny up there in Idaho and have her take her 357 on you. You keep talking like that.
Right? Right?
Yeah. Rude.
Yeah, granny don't fuck around.
No. Don't disrespect our era, man. I can't recall the last time I saw students passing actual paper notes in class, but I clearly remember students checking their phones recently and often. In his history of handwriting, The Missing Ink, author Philip Hensher recalls the moment he realized he had no idea what his good friend's handwriting looked like. It never struck me as strange before. We'd have gone on like this forever, hardly noticing that we had no need for handwriting anymore. No need for handwriting. Surely there must be a reason I keep finding pens everywhere. It can vary what the meaning is. Handwriting romantics aren't usually referring to any crude letter form created by from pen and ink. They're picturing fluid joined up letters of the Palmer period, which dominate first and second grade pedagogy for much of the 20th century. Perhaps they're longing for a past that never actually experienced, envisioning the sharply angled Spencerian script of the 1800s. Despite the proliferation of handwriting eulogies, it seems that no one really is arguing against the fact that everyone still writes. We just tend to use unjoined print rather than a fluid Palmerian style, and we use it less often. I have mixed feelings about the state of affairs. It pained me when I came across a student who wasn't able to read script handwriting at all. That's a fucking problem. That's a problem. Like I said, like I told Angel before, man, there's people that they're not going to be able to read the fucking Constitution in its original form. They won't know how to read cursive, you know, the Bill of Rights, shit like that. It's like the fucking situation with the Bible all over again. You're going to have monks are going to tell you what it says instead of you being able to read the fucking thing.
But is this true, though? Like, is it a thing where people don't know how to read cursive?
That's what he's saying. That's what this person just said.
No, I but like, okay.
He can't read script handwriting at all.
That's weird.
It is weird, but like those articles that you've brought up in the past in the newspapers where the S's look like F's, mm-hmm. like that's a print style,
mm-hmm.
but we could deduce what the rest of the word is based on the letters that that the subsequent letter scheme that comes after it. You can deduce that that is an actual S and not an F. You know what I mean? You just have to apply some common sense. This person's saying this kid can't fucking read cursive. He can't read it. Which to me is wild because it's not even another language, right? It's not like, can you read this cursive French document in Francais, s'il vous plaît?
So like they have fonts that you can use electronically mm-hmm. that are cursive writing.
Absolutely.
So I find that to be odd that, you know, if that's the case, like with like, I know everything's like typically printed. You're reading books all the time. It's printed. Mm-hmm. And if they're not teaching you cursive writing in school, how are you going to learn how to write in cursive? How are you going to learn how to read in cursive?
Sure.
Like, I get that whole thing. But like, are they still just not teaching cursive anymore? Or like, what's the deal?
From what I understand, they're not. I think Ohio passed a law. Not that that's the solution. Let me look this up. I'm curious now, Angel. You got me thinking. Modern curriculum for English arts. Let's see here. Yep, Ohio is the latest state to reinstate cursive in the classroom. And this is from 2018. So they're teaching it now. Yeah. Larger trend of schools to bring back cursive following a nationwide backlash. Once thought to boost the developmental benefits that come with writing by hand, research has shown that learning cursive isn't uniquely beneficial. It may even slow down the learning process because it's more complex rather than manuscript. And as computers have become ubiquitous, cursive lessons have taken a back seat. But cursive still has its champions. Linking letters together to create whole words promotes clearer, more complete thinking, according to cursive supporters. With no data citation, unfortunately, we don't have any of that. And even today, that's just an opinion. So that's conjecture at this point. And even today's digital world, knowing cursive has its uses, from reading historical documents to signing one's name. Those are two fucking points that I just made.
Yeah.
Those two, that's the end of the discussion, because there's no empirical data to suggest in this article. I'm not saying in general, this article doesn't, it's from Mental Floss. So they even have a citation here. There's no citation to support, joined up writing, quote, joined up writing, is better. It's research that has shown that, it works. I mean, no, there's none of that. It's just people defending the practice. I defend the practice because I do it. And I find that I can write faster in cursive than printing letters out. I just, my pen never leaves the paper.
Yeah,
I just keep writing.
Yeah, that's why it's quicker, because you're doing it in a solid flow with the words, and like you're moving on and you're not lifting your hand as much.
Right.
Because when you're printing, you're lifting your hand.
Yep.
So it is quicker and more efficient to write in cursive.
Yeah, that's the only reason. I mean, yeah, it's... Back in the day, it showed that you actually stayed in school past the seventh grade when that mattered. But now, I don't think it matters at all. I really don't. I mean, it looks nicer. It looks nicer. So, Alabama, Louisiana, New York City, as if that was a state, largest public school system in America, have all once again made cursive part of their curriculums. Is there any data to suggest that cursive makes people smarter, Angel?
I don't know. I can.
Can you take a peek before we wrap up the show? Because yeah. Now I'm curious, because there's no citation here, so I'm a little pissed off. Chris, you can't make statements like that if you're not going to back it up with any kind of empirical evidence here. We need the data. Please show us the data. Just like them titties. Show us them titties, but we need to see the data.
Yep.
Anything?
So I have one from NBC News. Writing by hand may increase brain connectivity more than typing, readings of student brains suggest. And this is from researchers in Norway. So I can share the article.
Let's see it. All right.
Okay.
Man, they got that kid all fucking hooked up. Go ahead.
Typing may be faster than writing by hand, but it's less stimulating for the brain, according to research published Friday in the journal Frontiers in Psychology.
Okay.
At the start of the experiments, the students were told to either write words in cursive using a digital pen or on a touchscreen, or to type the same words using a keyboard. When the words such as forest or hedgehog appeared on the screen in front of them, they had 25 seconds to write or type it over and over. Meanwhile, a cap of sensors on their brain measured their brain waves. The cap's 256 electrodes attached to the scalp and recorded the electrical signals of the students' brains, including where brain cells were active and how parts of the brain communicated with each other. Our main finding was that handwriting activates almost the whole brain as compared to typewriting, which hardly activates the brain as such. The brain is not challenged very much when it's pressing keys on a keyboard as opposed to when it is forming those letters by hand. A study found that writing by hand required communication between the brain's visual, sensory, and motor cortices. People who wrote with the digital pen had to visualize letters, then use their fine motor skills to control their movement when writing. When you have to form letters by hand, A will look completely different than B, and it requires a completely different movement pattern. By contrast, when typing, the keys look mostly the same regardless of the letter. As a result, the study found typing required less brain activity in the visual and motor cortexes. Okay.
All right.
So, I mean, at least we know that, like, that is something.
There is a study.
Okay. And I'm assuming when you have even further visually and mental processing speaking, if you have to choose between print and cursive, you write in cursive, you are actually probably using a little bit more of a, this is what B looks like. This is what C looks like. What does Z look like again? You know what I mean? Like, as you're trying to spell words and write in cursive. So I would argue that, yeah, it probably is good for your brain.
Okay, great. Thanks for looking that up. I appreciate it.
There's a little more artistry involved in it.
Yes.
I agree with that. I like it better. I like to read, like, as far as reading other people's notes, I'd rather read them in cursive. But again, I'm showing my age because that's how we were taught, and that's how I've always written. I mean, that's how I write exclusively in cursive. It's just my notes. That's how I take notes, whether it be for work or whether it be for podcast notes or whatever. That's just how I write shit down. Even my grocery list when I go to the Aldi, the writing is in cursive.
Aldi.
I also saw an article by The Atlantic that Gen Z did not learn cursive.
That doesn't surprise me whatsoever.
But I mean, is it like when I
But on a side note, the Atlantic can suck my asshole.
that I agree with.
But I find it hard to believe that people didn't learn cursive. Like, I just thought maybe it was like a fucking talking point and it wasn't real.
Same generation who can't sign their name on a document. It's the same group of people, but
I
they.
was gonna say, you have to remember that, like, really, like, our generation and our age range right now, from like late 30s to mid 40s, we were that generation that saw the transition of everything from analog to digital,
Absolutely.
and we lived through the transition, you know,
Educated through the transition.
whereas those younger than us, everything's digital for them.
Yep.
Like, so it's
Yep.
a whole new era.
Not growing, like they don't know what it's like pre-internet. That which is wild, right? They never lived without it. You know.
Or like, you know, cell phones, how it wasn't really like when I was a teenager. There were some people that had cell phones, but like cell phones really didn't pick up and take off that everybody had them and using them until after 2000. Like, it was like 2000 and, you know, 5-ish where it became like a more widespread thing, and then like 2009 for sure, like everybody had a cell phone by then and was using it and like texting and things like that. But it was still, you know, texts were 10 cents a minute in 2005, you know.
10 cents. You mean oh,
Or
10 cents
10
each?
cents each, I'm sorry,
No,
10 cents each. So like, you know, it costs.
No calls after 7.
And like, you had to, you know, your nighttime minutes were free and unlimited, but the daytime minutes were restricted. And I mean, that was still a thing
Yes, it
in
was.
2005, 2006, you know, 2007. And then some things changed marketing wise, and then like, you know, whatever. But like, they never even had to deal with that. So it's just funny. A lot of changes have occurred.
Truly, I agree, and it's there's a lot of things that I like about it. You know, back in 2009, 2010, yeah, I'd had a phone that didn't have social media apps on it. It made phone calls, text messages. You know what I mean? And if you hit the internet button on it, you're like, oh shit, now my bill's gonna go up. Let me
Back, back,
exit,
back, back,
exit,
back, back.
exit. Yeah, no, it didn't. That was yeah, it was a different time. Fuck a Wi-Fi? What Wi-Fi? There's no Wi-Fi involved. What are you talking about? You know, and then sneaking off. Christopher remembers back in the day, you used to fucking have to sneak in text messages because people would be patrolling to see if you were on your phone. I think they lost that war. I mean, hell, even at my job, nobody gives a fuck. They're like, whatever. It's just, it's. I have now have messages on my watch. Like, neighbor, I'm gonna win. Doesn't matter. I don't know. I don't know what people's opinion on this is. It does. I don't think it really matters. It doesn't show whether you have an educated hand or not anymore. You know, I remember there was a guy that Christopher and I work with called my seven, called it the parochial seven because when I write the seven, I put a line through the middle of the seven. I don't. He says, "Oh, that's a parochial seven." I'm like, "The fuck you talking about?" He's like,
You're eating pierogies at 7? Are you inviting me over?
You're always invited for pierogies.
I've
Yeah, but I write a seven. I write the seven. I put a line through it.
had it was a couple of years ago, but like, that's how I always make my sevens too, with the line through.
That's how I write them.
That's how I've always written mine too. And I
I'm looking this
gave
up.
a handwritten piece of paper to my boss, and it like had, and you know, it was like the quantities of something, you know, because I just jotted them down real quick. And I put, you know, 7, and then parentheses around it, and wrote what the fuck it was. And I handed it to him, and he was like, "What is this, a 7 or a 1?" And I was like, "It's a 7." And he was like, "I don't like that there's a line through this, because it kind of makes you think, is what number is this?" And I was like, I'll make it look like a regular seven. I'm sorry. So I did white out and was like seven. There you go.
The answer is fuck you. That's the seven, and that's the end of it. Let's see here. Depending on what country you went to school in, continental Europe and Latin America, the number is typically written with a strike through. In other parts of the world, such as the United States of America, not so much. The form in which the strike through is used is in official handwriting rules for primary school in several countries, including France, Italy, and Romania. Okay, so I guess that some of us do and some of us don't. I have the European Union seven.
Yeah, some of us are having pierogies at seven, and some of us aren't.
Yeah.
But what I could tell you is when I write seven for distance, it's either inches, feet, yards, miles. It ain't for fucking anything metric unless it's 7.62 by 54 or 39, either way. Yes to both. I don't have anything else. Anybody have anything else before we depart from this extravaganza?
Nope.
Thank you very much for looking up those things. I appreciate it. We do appreciate you. Christopher, do you have anything before we cut loose here?
Just watch us on BitChute. That's where you can look at our beautiful faces, because YouTube is a communist hellscape.
Yeah.
Truly,
A
truly.
communist shitlib hellscape.
Yes,
W
sir.
we even got, like, this was a while ago. I don't know if I brought this up, but we even got an email st stating a video that was, like, posted a long, long time
Yeah.
ago was, like, offensive. And so they're like, we're not going to give you a strike on it, but we just, removed it. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, we haven't even
Yeah.
uploaded
Yeah.
anything in how
How
long?
fucking magnanimous of you, YouTube.
So somebody must have watched it and reported it or something. That has
It's the
to be it.
algorithm.
Or, yeah, whatever. I mean, it's cool.
We had a 9/11 episode where we talked about conspiracy theories with Aaron from Timeline Earth. And we mentioned one about how that some people felt the Jews were behind it. I mean, I think Aaron believes that now anyway. It doesn't matter. But we got busted for that one. We got busted for that one. I'm like, we're just talking about what conspiracy. And they were like, I appealed it. They were like, blow me. So I'm like, no, fuck you, buddy. That's it. We're on BitChute now. That was Christopher's idea, and it's a good one. So please check us out there. Angel, again, nothing.
Yeah, bit shoot number two.
Okay. All right. Appreciate everybody. Thank you very much. Sorry for our absence. We are back in the saddle again here on the Lake Erie Current podcast. Thank you to our patrons and our sponsors. Of course, our premier sponsor, Fairly Decent Golf. Thanks to Bobby, wonderful man that he is. Love you, buddy. But of course, we have come to the conclusion of this episode, which means, you guessed it, a discussion of your asshole health, your overall skin health, your washing habits, your personal hygiene, or lack thereof. Many of you are in the latter category, aren't you? Not in the former. Ladies and gentlemen, the high holidays in the Christian calendar have come and gone. Yes. And probably you haven't came at all. Because you haven't listened, right? Easter is over. The next big holiday on the regular calendar is going to be Memorial Day. Usually the first big barbecue party of the year, right? You have a nice big gathering. Folks get out the charcoal or the gas, ready to heat that fucker up. They've gone to Aldi, gotten their assorted meats, gotten all of their condiments ready. Okay, gonna have a nice party, a nice Aldi's themed party in the backyard. Maybe it's the first time you've been invited over amongst the friend group. Now is your chance to make a great impression, ladies and gentlemen. Don't pass up this opportunity to make that lasting impression that is in a positive fashion and not in the negative because you have ass stink. You're not washing properly. The soap that you use isn't powerful enough. It doesn't have the capacity to ass fuck stink. Of course it doesn't. You went to the store and buy. You can't buy this soap at Aldi. No matter how good Aldi is, this soap is not the soap you need. Todd's Gay soap is. Todd's Gay soap, which I don't know if he has put it on the website or not. We've been working on it, but we do have a collection of gay soap here in the studio. For those of you that are interested, please let us know. Todd's Gay soap is going to prepare you for those gatherings, those summer get-togethers, the cookouts, the baseball games, all the fun stuff. You disc golf? You like to go disc golfing? Well, tell you what, when someone's standing next to you the tee and they smell that ass cheese, they'll be like, I guess he's not washing with Todd's Gay soap. Not invited back to the house for the after party. Ladies and gentlemen, Listen to your soap, A for champion. Use Todd's Gay Soap in the dung ditch, fat folds, under boob, all that good shit. Please wash the Todd's Gay Soap because Todd's Gay Soap is...
Oh, that ass. And if you're going to go to the family barbecue, make sure you don't smell like doo-doo. Wash with Todd's Gay Soap.
Thank you very much. Love you guys. Thank you for hanging with us, the 4.5 of you, 4.7 of you. Thank you very much for hanging with us. Glad to be back, and we'll see you soon. Thank you.
Bye.